Good afternoon, good evening, and good night, wherever you might be when you're listening to this. My name is Charisse Alexander, your host of Your Collective. And on today's episode, I have my son, Anthony Hume. And what we'll be chatting about is really a lot about the different roles between males and females, but from a young perspective. Anthony is the last guest in my Mini Men series. So without further ado, let's dive in. Thank you, everyone, for joining today. And thank you, Anthony, for joining today on Your Collective. For those of you who do not know, Anthony is my son, and we have some really great conversations and debates in our family. And Anthony and I have had some really interesting conversations and debates. So I'm going to give you a little bit of color and a little bit of context. I won't quite give you color and context yet, but I will welcome Anthony to Your Collective. So welcome, Anthony.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, it's a pleasure to have you here. So for the audience, why don't you give them a little bit of an intro about yourself, who you are, what you're about, what you do, etc.
Sure. I'm Anthony. Just your classic young man, I guess, trying to make ends meet. A crazy world. From post-secondary institution. As Charisse, or my mom said, I don't know. We're just going to call her Charisse today. As she said, I'm young. I'm the youngest person, if you've listened to this whole men's series, as she's calling it. I'm the youngest person that you're going to hear. By far, played football, so that's probably going to color a lot of my experiences. And currently living in Yellowknife up in Canada. If you're not familiar with where that is, very, very, very far north. When people think Canada and think we live in igloos, darn close up here. Currently living on Chief Drahi's territory, Treaty 8 territory. And yeah, I'm a teacher. By trade and by practice, that's what I do, trying to make ends meet in a world that doesn't really want me to do that. I don't know what else I'm supposed to say, but that's really who I am without getting too much more personal. That's very surface level. I'm much more, but that's all you get.
Well, we'll see about that, young one. So, you know, other guests that I've had on here, and I obviously know you because you're my son, but for those who might not know you in detail, and maybe for the purpose of the theme, and as you so rightly said, you are the last guest in a bit of a mini men's series where I'm interested in male perspectives. And so I'm curious from your perspective, because, you know, through all these episodes, I talk so much about what it's been like as a mom, but you're the first child of mine to be here. So I'm curious what it was like growing up for you in our household, and how do you feel like that might have colored your view on male and female roles in the household?
I feel like I'm a pretty progressive person when it comes to my view on male-female roles. My upbringing was pretty balanced, I would say, overall, like not very traditional. Both my parents cooked, cleaned, did errands, changed diapers, took care of kids, took people to soccer practice, like, you know, all these traditional things, I would say, were kind of shared roles in my upbringing. So that's probably the biggest one. However, I also come from our family, male dominant. There's only, out of the six of us, including parents and kids, only two girls in that mix. So very masculine environment. All four of us, or three of us boys, I should say, played football. Both my parents either coached or were a part of the team at a administrative level growing up. At some point, all four of us played. So yeah, very masculine sort of environment. Not saying that's positive or negative, is what it was, from that idea of kind of always pushing, always grinding, always trying to be better. It was very much breed and bred, reinforced, I'd say, on a daily basis, quite literally. A common phrase in our house growing up on a daily basis, you'd hear on the way going out to school or wherever you're going, was to be great. So that was something that I think still very much impacts the way I view the world today and probably how I view people and interactions, et cetera.
Be great. So you're right. That was one of the things that would be said, was be great. I'm not going to dive into that, because I mean, that could be, some would say, a positive or a negative connotation, because it lines up an expectation in a youthful mind of being perfect. And there is no such thing as perfect. The imperfection is the perfection, as I like to sometimes say. But we're going to pivot for a moment, because, you know, what really, when I was thinking about what I wanted you to share, I'm going to give a little bit of context here. You and I were having a conversation. It was definitely during COVID. Mm-hmm. It was about 3 years ago. And you were trying to tell me something. It was that Airbnb that I'd rented it was in Edmonton. It was right by Ainley, and we were sitting in the dining room, and you were started talking about men's rights. And I remember looking at you and being like, child, ain't nobody want to hear no shit about men's rights. And you looked at me, and I've recounted this story to a few people, but you looked at me, and because you were talking about Abba and Preach and Red Pill movement and so on and so forth. And you were talking about how important it was as a woman to be mindful that this is a movement that has traction and is gaining more momentum. And so I'd never heard of the Red Pill movement at this point in my life. And this is what actually made me go and look for Abba and Preach. But you'd said, you are a mother of three sons and you don't care about the things that are important to me. And it was like a mic drop.
I would stand by that still.
Yeah. And so because of who I like to show up as a parent, I did go look. And I didn't go deep into Red Pill. I just went and checked out Abba and Preach. And I actually really enjoyed their YouTube channel because it's very relatable. They're extremely commonsensical. There was absolutely nothing that these guys were talking about that I didn't think was reasonable by any stretch of the imagination. So much so, Anthony, that it really planted a seed in my mind of, I kind of feel bad for men. To be honest with you, it's a confusing world right now. And we can dive more into what my thoughts and feelings are before people take that statement really out of context, but I'll dive into more of that later. But for those of the people who are listening today who don't know, can you please elaborate on what exactly the Red Pill movement is? What is it about? From your understanding.
For sure. A few things before we dive into this. Number one, shameless plug to Abba and Preach, as you said. Granted, I guess I haven't really seen their stuff lately, so maybe I shouldn't shameless plug this. We can maybe cut this in post, but two Canadian Black creators.
They're hilarious. I'm sorry, I got to say, their content is so entertaining.
They are. They are.
And it's real. It's very real.
And as we're wont to do, you and I, I'm going to try not to veer too far off into a tangent, but you mentioned how, you know, you used it to kind of gain some insight into maybe how the male perspective. I feel similarly, and I've told this to you as well, as a youth of the younger generation, I felt times where it's helped me see the perspective of the older generation, the Gen Xers, you would, you know, so like people who are you and my father's age, especially that older male perspective, because I'd be shaking my head going like, what is this dude on about? Like, what is it? Like, where's this guy coming from? But then, you know, the way that they explain some things. Anyways, so if you haven't checked them out, I would recommend still. The second caveat, I'm not a Red Pill guy. Would never ever claim to be a Red Pill guy. So at that time in COVID, I believe, and I would still stand by this, I believe what I was trying to say at that time when I was like, red pill this, red pill that, was like, as you just said, is that it's this movement that is gaining traction. And what I said then and would still stand by today is that that is like a frightening thing to me. Basically, the red pill movement, this idea of it goes back to the like Matrix, you know what I mean? Like, so if you, maybe if mom wants to go crazy on editing and put that scene in post right now of like when, or like the audio from when Neo meets Morpheus and Morpheus is like, hey, do you want to stay in fairy tale land or do you want to see the truth? And the truth is the red pill and staying in fairy tale land where everything, where it's just like, you know, you just got the blinders on, you're a quote unquote sheep, is the blue pill. And so that I think is where the movement gets its name from. But effectively, yeah, it's these guys who are purporting to support men's rights in a world that is becoming increasingly more, how would I say this, female dominant, which is good, and feminine in terms of how our government structures are run, how societally, how we're moving towards in terms of like with things like Me Too and like the LGBT movement and like, you know, caring about how we say and what we say in, you know, in these spaces and kind of having these safe spaces very much flies in the face of that. I mostly disagree with a lot of the red pill people because I think it veers so hard from like critique of, you know, some areas where we may have gone too far. Because I think a lot of these recent movements, like I said, Me Too, fighting for equality for LGBT folks, those I think are good things. But then there are some things, you know, for example, like limitations on freedom of speech, some of these rules and applications of safe spaces, that kind of stuff, that some people, there's valid critiques of things going too far. So that's, I think, where it started. And some people have realized, oh, just like media, you know, the more sensational that you make things, the bigger you make things, the bigger the story, the more views and thus the more money I get. And I think that those people have really focused in on a group of vulnerable young men who perhaps don't have the best role models in their real day-to-day lives. So they're reaching, they're searching, they're hungry for that masculine, you know, that word, that influence, you know, that knowledge to be passed down, but they don't, maybe they might not have that in their own lives. Maybe they come from a single mother household. Maybe, you know, they have a abusive or neglectful or an absentee father figure, you know what I mean? Who knows the reason why, but, my theory is that these toxic red pill people really focus and prey upon that super, super vulnerable young male demographic. And I think that if, and when they are radicalized, that they can be some very scary and dangerous people in society, as we've seen. Sorry for the tangent and rant, but yeah, that's red pill in summary. I'll put in quotation
marks there. And you know, I didn't dive deep into what the red pill movement, from my limited research, you know, you summarized it fairly well. And if you don't know, if you want to learn more, if you want to learn more just to understand, you can Google it. And I mean, the summary you gave is pretty well exactly what I saw as well, that the premise was built upon the idea of exactly that, the Matrix, you know, take the red pill, the truth shall be revealed, take the blue pill, and you can continue in your very simulated world of not knowing or understanding. So, you know, interestingly enough, when you and I had this conversation, I'm curious if your thoughts and feelings are still the same then as they are today. And where I'm going with this is when you were talking about men's rights, what were you really saying for yourself? When you pose that question of like, well, don't you care about what's important to me? So what would prompt you to ask that question about men's rights? What did you feel like I, as your mother, was not hearing you say at that point in time?
I feel like it's just that exactly. And I feel like, again, everything's anecdotal when we're talking, right? Like, you know, we all live kind of within our own echo chambers, So everything I would say is still with a grain of salt. But I guess to answer your question, what you just said, which is like, what was I looking for when I said that? I think just to be heard. I feel like what I meant by that is that like I'm a big discourse guy. I don't really care, what side you fall on in most things, but I'm here for discourse. I'm here for sharing ideas, for learning. That's really what I'm here for. Like I'm at, like I said in my intro, I am a teacher, so I'm for learning, and you can't really learn without making mistakes, without being wrong, without hearing something that may challenge you mentally. And so I think at that time in COVID, ugh, the worst time, spilling a lot of things. But especially in the online sphere, I was feeling very, and from time, even this goes far back, even before COVID, like I think for a very long time, as feminism has empowered women and online spaces and societies become more inclusive to women and different people, becoming less male dominated. People don't want to hear from men as much, which is like understandable, valid, and fair. But I think that there's a danger that comes when we kind of almost silence a group of people, or just don't want to hear their opinions and takes. Like, I don't want to hear what you have to say. You've kind of spoken enough. And for someone like me who's in their 20s, I'm like, motherfucker, I've barely spoken. Like, what do you mean I haven't spoken enough? Like, I just got
Yeah,
here. Like, you
it's
know what you
true. You
mean?
did just get here. At least at that point, I mean, you're a young adult, and I can appreciate that. And that's why when you said you have three sons and you don't care about what's important to us, I mean, that was extremely such a powerful statement in that moment when you said it. And I think out of what you just said there, the most important thing, and what I was saying when I was like, listen, ain't nobody trying to hear about no men's rights right now. It's a little bit in line with what you're saying. And I think really what I was trying to get at is like the feminist movement is still so young. You know, it's been a patriarchal environment for a very long time. And the experience that we as women enjoy in North America and parts of Europe is, it's only a small fraction of the globe that it gets to enjoy that experience. You know, you just need to get on a plane and travel to any country that is outside of North America or Europe, and you will see a very, very different experience for women. And I think that's where the shift is coming from. And I mean, of course, change is one of those things that has to be managed. Change is scary for people. But really, all that I was trying to say is the world is changing. And right now, we're in this transition where, you know, right, wrong, or otherwise, I think there's always a way that we can say something, myself included, so that it'll be well received from the other person or well received by the receiving party. And what I was trying to say to you is exactly that. The world is changing. It has been a patriarchal society for a very, very long time. And women are just, they're doing the things that bring them peace, fulfillment, and joy. Because speaking as a woman, pardon me, who has, I think I'm a really good, you know, here's the terminology from Red Pill movement or trad wives or whatever the case may be. I grew up in a household where I watched traditional roles and it worked. You know, there were pink jobs and there were blue jobs, and my mom did very clearly pink jobs and my dad did clearly blue jobs. And the reality is that everybody seemed happy. And my parents have been married for 47 years this year. So, and they are happy. My parents are disgustingly in love, I dare say. But the point is I absolutely walked into my adult years thinking, that's exactly what I'm going to do. I want that because it worked. I had a beautiful example of how these traditional roles worked. But in practicality, it didn't work, at least not in the relationship that I was in. So, I think this is where we start to question whether or not these traditional roles really actually can provide that partnership that you're looking for. Because that's really what we're talking about here when we talk about trad wives and red pill movements and things like that. Men are feeling like, and that's why I love Abba and Preach, because the things that some of these women are saying on these shows make me cringe. But in any event, so for you then,
they're nervous.
Sorry?
They need to touch grass.
Say that again.
I said, they're outrageous.
100%.
They're living in the DeLulu.
Absolutely.
Some say.
I mean, it's like I heard one of these ladies on, it was on Abba and Preach. You know what they do? They take a clip and then they dissect it. And a woman was on there and she's like, I don't need a man. I can have a baby without a man. I can fix my car without a man. I can buy a house without a man. And I'm hearing all of this and all of that is true. We don't need anybody to say whether that's true or not. The truth is nobody needs anybody, period. And I definitely, but then I put myself in the position of being the person on the receiving end of hearing, I don't need you for anything. It doesn't land well.
That's what it is.
It doesn't sound good. It doesn't feel good.
I fully agree with that sentiment too. Like, I'm not going to sit here and say, I know plenty of single mothers. I have single mothers who are friends, who are family. You know what I mean? Like, who I have friends of whose mothers, like, some of the strongest people in this world, I think, are single parents, but in particular single mothers. Okay. But that doesn't mean it's ideal. There's a reason why it's a predictor for a litany of not good outcomes. Okay. It's because ideally, and this sometimes hurts people's feelings, but let's just call a spade. This one is research backed. In an ideal world. Yes, I can. In an ideal world, right? Men and women are designed to kind of rear children together, or even in a more ideal world, familial units, right? Grandparents, cousins, aunts, uncles, right? Like, all working. That old saying of it takes a village. And I know that clip you're talking about, because I remember, I don't know if anything vexed me to my core as hearing that as a young man, being like, And again, like, in my own reflection, even as I sit here now, what I'm about to say is like, my first thought was like, well, Anthony, what you're about to say is probably how women have felt for centuries. What I'm about to say is, you just want me for my body. I'm like, you just want me for the sperm. And then you want to just like leave me out to dust and not even
pretty
have
well
dinner afterwards.
And that's what and that's what these guys were saying. But, like, you just want to take my sperm and run. And she was like, that's all I need you. And she said that. Yes, that's all I need you for. I'm going to take your sperm and I don't need you for anything. Like, ouch, that hurts. That stings.
And like, and jokes aside, right? From like, and again, like, I think that it's a valid comparison to be like, you know, that's what, again, what women have been dealing with. And that's why we've come this way with the feminist movement. I'm not against women having more equality, more rights, more freedoms in our society. I just think we need to have conversations about, like, as we do that, okay, there's still this other half of society that matters. Because on a more real level, what you're saying to me when I watch that video to that woman is, you don't add any value to our society. That shit hurts. And it's just not true. It's just not true. And it's like, yo, you want to piss somebody off like real quick, tell them that they don't matter whatsoever. Like, and that's, again, I think what a lot of young, vulnerable men are hearing, like, you don't matter. We don't need you. We can do this all on our own. And for them, they I'm lucky to have people in my life that pick me back up and show me on a daily basis that is not true. But if I didn't have that support, I might feel a lot worse about myself and have a lot different mindset.
And I think that the truth is, Anthony, like, if I'm going to be fully honest and authentic here, that's ultimately what you would have heard me saying when I stood in front of you and said, ain't nobody want to hear about men's rights right now. I was saying, you don't matter because you're a man and I don't care to hear what you have to say right now. That's what I said in that moment. And I have absolutely made the statement to your dad where I've said the same thing that lady said. Now, my intention was to say to him, because, you know, I said, you know, I don't need you, I choose you, right? So I didn't just say, I don't need you. I said, I don't need you, I choose you. And so it's a compliment because I have my pick of many. And out of many, I picked you. But even then, even with all that additional, you know, whatever fluffery, it doesn't take away from the fact that I still said, like, I don't need you. Like, I can do this by myself. And going back to that original statement that I made, like, the truth is like, logically, we get that. Nobody needs anybody to do anything. We are all self-sufficient, in one way or another. We will survive. But, so that's an interesting idea. So I guess pivoting just a little bit for you, do you feel like you, like as a young man out there in the world doing your thing, liaising with women and stuff, do you feel like you understand them? Like, do you think that's part of this red pill thing is that men just are trying to understand women and where we're coming from? And further to that, do you feel like you understand women?
I'll start at the personal level. I think naively when I was young, I would have said, yeah, I understand women. But now as I get older, absolutely not. Absolutely not. But we can have that in a second. I guess the red pill movement being to under men trying to understand women, I don't think it's that at all. I think it's men trying to find the face of this pressure that they're feeling. You know, you talk about the traditional roles, traditional men, traditional women. As I said, I grew up in a very progressive home. So for me, you know, I feel those pushes to move in a more progressive way. I'm open to it. More traditional people, right, are going to kind of push back against that. So I think it's not men trying to understand women whatsoever. It's men trying to like push back against that pressure that they're feeling. And as you said, change is hard, maintain that norm that they've had and in times past. And as for me, yeah, I don't really think I think I continue to grow and learn and try to always like have empathy for everybody and hear people out. But I don't know if I understand how anybody thinks. In aggregate, I think what I understand about women is that it's just that like we're just different. You know what I mean? That like so sometimes men and women are different and that I don't know what I'm gonna try to say right now. It's just no, is my answer, I guess,
Well,
in
I
a
think
nutshell.
you did answer the question, and that is that, I think women are tasked equally with the challenge of understanding men. And I think I shared with all of you, as in my children, that I think it was this year, maybe this year or last year, I read the book, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus. Oh, what an eye-opening book. But I'll tell you, I continue to plug that book, and I think there's an updated version for the modern world because that book was actually written quite some time ago. But when I read it, and as I related it to understanding men better, it absolutely gave me way more understanding of men. It was because it talked about, just kind of like there's this thing that I don't think that we can negate. No matter how much time passes, no matter how much we evolve as a species, or maybe there will come a time outside of our lifetimes where we as a species will evolve to the point where those very biological and physiological things that we were eons ago will maybe not matter so much. And what I mean when I say about that is the nurturer role that women play versus the hunter-gatherer, provider, protector role that men play, and how we value each other within that. And it absolutely underpins how we relate to each other in conversation. So, a common example that I have found is communication. It's often a challenge between men and women. Women are talkers. At least I'm a talker. I love to talk. I want to talk about my feelings, my feelings, my feelings, and more feelings. Men, it's very rare, I think, in my experience, to find a man. And I think that it's not because men don't have feelings. It's just not the way that men are wired. They don't necessarily want to sit down and kibitz about that. Now, I can admit, and you can verify this, but I think that this next generation is a little different when it comes to how men and women or how young men are relating, because I think you are very in touch with your feelings. Is that assessment correct?
And I would agree, and I would think that even, as I said, the more traditional men I've been around are far more progressive than a traditional person or man, sorry, of like your guys's generation. And like the openness to new ideas, to the in touchness with their feelings. It's like, I meet very few men these days that are completely closed off to that. Now, granted, you know, there's again the anecdotal, whatever experience of living in Canada. As you said, you hop on a plane, go somewhere else. I'm sure it's far different in other places. Pardon me. But yeah, it's funny. I was actually kind of laughing as you're saying that. And you're like, I feel like men don't want to talk and women love to talk. And I'm like, I was thinking about all my dating history. And I'm like, wow, I feel like it's the opposite. Like, I feel like I'm always trying to like be very clear with my communication, explain why I'm thinking the way, where I'm thinking, why I'm trying to think. Like, because, you know, you brought it down to feelings, feelings, feelings. And I feel like that's probably a basal, like, difference between men and women. Women more in tune with feelings, emotions, et cetera, et cetera. It comes down to hormones, as you said, child rank, like having menstruation on a monthly basis, mess with your hormones. That doesn't happen to me. So like our hormones are just different. So thus women tend to be more emotional creatures. That's biology. That's not going to change, as you said, until thousands of years come and we're in our metal suits like we're Iron Man. But until that time, that's still going to be
the
case,
right? But do you think that could be a function of the environment that you... I mean, I personally think that we're a product of our environments. And so if you are in an environment that encourages you to, okay, now I'm going to say this with a grain of salt, but I think that if you're in an environment that encourages you to identify your feelings, acknowledge them, have them, and talk about them, then it makes you more open to doing all of those things. For the ladies that you're talking about, maybe they didn't grow up in that kind of environment. So I guess that I'm supposing that you grew up in an environment that encouraged that.
Yes. And I guess really what I'm trying to say is like, I feel like, again, as this movement has progressed, you know, it has pushed a more progressive sort of thought on young men my age-ish. And I think when I look at those around me, that tends to be it, right? But now you have this group of young men who are not, I'm using air quotes, by nature inclined to be as in touch with their emotions. But because of the societal pressure, school, right? Like, I think that's a big one. Like, that kind of, this sort of idea to, like, think about your feelings and emotions and have that. Metacognition is a big thing in school as well. So men are working, boys are working on these skills that like don't come naturally to them. So they kind of come out more balanced. Whereas women are kind of, you know, pushing this narrative. And this is a new take. So take it with a grain of salt, pushing this new narrative, this more progressive, open, touchy feely sort of space, but aren't working on their lagging skills of critical thinking, you know, of thinking of stuff.
Whoa.
So perhaps they have those feelings and emotions. Listen, that's, you asked me my take. This is my experience. Whoa. That's what I think. Cause I've broken this down and I've had to have some very tough, direct conversations as of late with my partner and be like, listen, like you, like I'm sitting here trying to have a conversation. I'm asking you to think about things in a serious and critical way. And you're just putting up walls. It makes you feel too much. You just go, I don't want to feel. And I just don't want to think about it. I'm like, well, that's not how life works. We can't just hit pause on thinking about things because it makes us uncomfortable. Like we have to push through that and, you know, grapple with things that are challenging. And now that may have been too grand sweeping a statement, but that is where I find that breakdown. It's not that, you know, women don't have these feelings. I find there's a challenge in like that being expressed and it being communicated clearly.
So not speaking for your partner, but I
might be a hot take.
I'm gonna weigh in for a moment and you can tell me to mind my own damn business if you want to, but I understand what you're saying. And I was actually going to say that I think that it could be, you know, I don't even know that it's a man and a woman thing, because let's put it like this. If you have an insecurity about something and you hit my hot button on that insecurity, so we're going to be candid here. So one insecurity that I had during my relationship with your dad was he would always tell me that I was too sensitive. And it was like he would say, "You're just being so sensitive," or like, "or too sensitive." And that the way it was delivered, I found it insulting. And to the point where I was like, okay, well, I guess I'll just put up some walls and not be so sensitive. And the point that I'm trying to drive at here is like, if that person has like an insecurity about something like critical thinking, you know, maybe it boils down to really at the end of the day, recognizing that the approach on this is maybe not working and we're going to readjust and we're going to have this conversation, or even the person who's receiving it who's feeling triggered. Because really, when we feel something, it's really an indicator to us that there's something within us that needs to be healed. So in my own example where I said I would feel triggered when somebody would tell me that I was too sensitive, well, be that as it may, all that I needed to recognize, you know, all those years ago was like, okay, why am I reacting like this? Why am I upset about this? Okay, am I too sensitive? Do I really think that? No, I have feelings and I want to feel them. And if you don't want to deal with them, then go to another room. I'm not doing anything other than feeling my feelings. So my point within all of that is that that could be true where maybe you feel like I can acknowledge that from your perspective, maybe you're doing your work and your partner is not doing theirs. But there's also something very wise that you said to me a few years ago, and I don't remember if you'll remember this, but I was having a conversation with you. I think I'd just gotten home from Nigeria, and you said, "Mom, sometimes you just have to meet people where they are." And you sometimes give me these one-liners where it's, I feel like there was just a mic drop when you say things like that. But I'm going to spit that back to you and say, sometimes you just have to meet people where they are. So if you know that there is a sensitivity around that, then preface it. Right? Now, I'm not trying to get
For
into
sure.
all of that, but
No, but I guess all I would say to like kind of push back is like, I agree. There can be a sensitivity. There can be like, we're all human. We're all going to have things that trigger us that put those walls up, right? But as you pointed out, right, you went and you did that work when you were feeling that way, right? I feel like oftentimes when I'm around young women these days, that work is put back on me, you know? Like, yes, you can be upset about something and triggered and not want to talk about it, but it's on you to do that work. It's on you to let me know that, you know? You can't just lash out at me because you didn't like something and I'm just sitting here going, what the, like, what did I even say? Like, I have no idea what I've even done to merit this reaction. I'm just trying to have a normal conversation and an adult conversation, you know? That's on you to do that work. And on you to make me aware so I can make those changes. Hey, I don't actually like when we talk about this, so can we kind of do it in a different way? Can we do this? Can we do that? Oh, for sure, of course. I didn't know that you felt that way. You have to let your partner know that in that case. Now we're going down a off on a
That's okay.
different
We can let this go wherever it goes. But,
space.
you know, responding back to that, that requires a large degree of awareness. And at the end of the day, you know, when I think about when I started to do the work on myself and the reflection on myself, you know, it's years of work. It's not a day, a week, or a month. It is like really genuinely stopping and saying, okay, something is not working here. Because, and I think that that comes from recognizing patterns of behavior within yourself. So, you know, I've often said to you know, the self-awareness that you show, the emotional maturity that you show is like so, such a beautiful thing to watch, especially given how young you are. For myself, that didn't start until like, I don't know, I think I was like 37. So like 12, 13 years after you started maybe pondering these bigger questions. So that's why I said we got to meet people where they are. And you know, I think if we just maybe kind of remember that relationships really, somebody totally took the romanticism out of it for me not that long ago. And they said, you know, we think that relationships are all about love and all this other kind of stuff. And sure, that's nice. That's a lovely sentiment. But the truth is that relationships are the greatest opportunity for us to learn about ourselves because often the things that are reflected, so in other words, what we see in other people, in our relationships that we don't like or rub us the wrong way, is a reflection of something within ourselves that we do not like. And I've tested this theory on myself, on almost everything that I can think of, and it hasn't failed me yet. Even the ones that surprise me, it'll usually reflect itself, or I'll have an understanding at some point down the road. So relationships are a real interesting place to have this conversation. Because again, I go back to saying, I think this whole red pill movement ultimately boils down to how we as men and women relate with each other, not only just in close personal relationships, but even in the workplace.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
So there was something that you'd said that I wanted to expand upon a little bit more. You'd said that you felt like the red pill movement was like, it was dangerous if we weren't mindful of it. Mm-hmm. Can you elaborate more on what you meant?
Yeah, for sure. I want to go about this. I'm trying to be as PC as I can be, but also speak bluntly at the same time. But you can't do both in today's world. No. I think basically, in a nutshell, like I said, I think it's a vulnerable population that just like any kind of radical idea. If you radicalize a group of people, they can be pushed, coerced, persuaded to do dangerous things, or get their own ideas to do dangerous things. You know, like, let's not get it twisted. Women are still the biased recipients of domestic violence, of sexual violence, of assault, of harassment in the workplace and in the world, right? So it's not like, you know, it's why the idea of men's right is still a laughable thing, because even in the West, right, you've talked about going outside of the Western world and seeing how different things are. Even in the West, this is still the reality. So I guess the reason why I think that it's dangerous is because I think that if you have this group of vulnerable people who are having these ideas filled in their head that, you know, they are owed something, or that they are being wronged in a certain way, or that, and that the issue all comes down to this group of people, right? That line of like thought has never panned well for human beings in the past, period. That's how genocides have happened. That's how wars have been started. That's how lots of bad things have happened, by saying all these problems that you are facing are because of that group of people over there. And so thus it's, so then the next logical thought is, well, then the retaliation towards that group of people is now justified because they're fucking on me. Sorry for the language.
Okay,
I'm not
honey.
Sure what the quote is here on this podcast. Okay, cool. But because they're messing with me, now it's validated that I go, whatever, call them a slut in the street because they're wearing this. I shame them for their notch count. I do this, I do that. Third, it's all justified because all this bad feelings I'm feeling, well, that's their fault. Even if this woman's done nothing to me, she is a symbol for all the bad things that have happened. Again, it's a theory. It's not founded in anything, but I think, you know, when we look at who perpetrates these crimes I'm talking about, it is men. So that's why I think it's dangerous.
So do you know of any women, though, that are staunch supporters of the red pill movement in one capacity or another?
I don't know if I like, I try to get off the online spaces these days. As you may tell, I can get very passionate about these topics, and it can mess with anybody's head. Being online too much isn't good for anybody. But I remember when I was online, I would see like the odd female creator who would kind of espouse sort of things that like we're talking about, more moderation in considering these ideas, and like, you know, not just jumping on the bandwagon of shitting on men, but being like, hey, like, you know, have you ever considered how like men have to deal with like this? You know what I mean? And how that might not be too hot. And how would you feel if the shoe was on the other foot, kind of thing? I've seen a couple, but no, it's mostly, like I said, it's a men-led movement. And even when you bring up, even if you bring up these conversations without using these triggering words, such as men's rights, red pill, whatever, just bringing up the ideas to women, I've found, oof, it can get hot and heated in a second. So it's just not worth it. Hot and heated in a good way. Hot and heated in a fiery, feisty, we're now fighting each other way.
I'm sorry. And I say that because
I love it. No, it's fine for me. I love the mental sparring. It's I think it's great. I think it's great to challenge
Sure,
people
I
and
totally
challenge each
agree. I
other.
mean, you grew up in a house where we did this all the time. We still do it to this day. So at the end of the day, I also, we
Literally
are,
doing it
and
right
I
now.
enjoy the discourse because how, if I actually approach each interaction as an opportunity to either teach or to learn, then no matter what, something great is going to happen. And the reality is I mean, even in that moment where you said to me, you have three sons and you don't care about the things that are important to us. And I'll never forget that statement. But I guess I bring it up because it was the beginning of shifting, and not to say by any stretch of the imagination that I would consider myself a feminist. I think that I consider myself an equalist more than anything else. And the reality is that statement that you'd made, I think was the beginning of a shift in my own perspective and thinking about it really for my sons. And so that's why I said to you, even in conversation with people today, when we talk about men and women and this transitional time that we're in right now, I'll often say, I really feel bad for men. They're Please don't tar and feather me. But what I mean when I say that is like, as I said, it's a transition generation where we're moving from what was to something new, and it's scary. And as you so rightly said, men are, some men, not all, are probably in resistance of that because it's been very masculine energy for a very, very long time. And I would actually prefer a world where we can recognize and see each other's differences and actually celebrate what those differences are. Because at the end of the day, I want men in my life. They bring lots of value to this world. And I would never ever say that there's, as there are bad men, there are equally bad women. And I say bad just meaning they're coming from a place of some kind of unhealed hurt and pain. I think that there's light in every single one of us. So, in your opinion, as we move forward through this transitionary phase, how do you think that we bridge the gap so that we can appreciate and celebrate each other's differences?
The same way I'm quietly clapping. The same way we bridge gaps with anybody, with any person over any issue, anywhere, is to communicate. That's the way. Open discourse, talking, being upset and not running away, not throwing stones, sitting in the uncomfortable feelings and just learning, as you said. Learning is not, I'm sorry. I feel like I've had this conversation lost this week, so it is a little monotone because I'm just like, I'm trying to keep my own emotions in check because I feel so passionately about this topic. And passion, while great in life, not great on an audio medium for people's ears. So yeah, I would say discourse, talking, because I think that that's been lost. I think that that is we are losing lots because of technology these days. I recently heard this week that there's no more third space. I'm not sure if you know what that is. It's a whole different thing. But that idea that we used to have, there used to be work, home, and this third space we used to meet and gather, and we've lost that. I think that as we get more and more used to technology and reliant, we're losing things that make us human. And that is one of the things that makes us human, is talking about things. And again, being uncomfortable, feeling challenged and like not liking it. And like, because of the instant gratification that my generation has grown up with, like being the like first real generation to really have that always, like always, if I want something, I just have it right now. We've lost that patience, that like willingness to like be uncomfortable, to like, not have it our way always. We're kind of kings and queens of our own domains these days, and that means that we can kind of shut off our domain to anything that we don't like, which I think makes us weaker as a people, as a society. It's not good.
I'm
It's
so
not
glad that you
good.
touched on the emotional piece of it, and I keep coming back to it because it's such a critical part of having effective communication. And I have said to in throughout some of these podcasts that one thing that I remember doing with you kids, maybe not you as much, but definitely and onwards, you paved the way, but have your feelings, right? I remember allowing for that space. And I think that that's a really important part of being able to have that really valuable conversation, right? Is recognizing and asking yourself better questions, which is a little tricky when you're young. But I think that as you get older, if we can learn how to ask ourselves better and more critical questions, going back to what you were saying about critical thinking, become the spectator of your movie as opposed to being the actor or actress in your movie. And so what I mean when I make that statement is, you know, you are having a conversation, you are feeling triggered by it, some emotion, whatever it is, but generally of a low vibe. Okay, the first question in my mind is, why am I feeling this? And usually what we'll do, correct me if I'm wrong, is we're going to blame the other person. We're going to say, well, so-and-so said something and it made me angry. Okay, well, they're just saying something. Why are you actually angry? And start to, you know, logic your way through it. And that is a skill that we do not know how to do. And that needs to be taught, because you can't actually have effective communication if we can't remove the emotion from the conversation, which I think is exactly what you're saying as you were relating about your partner. So how do you move somebody through that? Do you even try, or do you just like, I want
to
hear it.
How do you glad you asked, because I'm here to drop knowledge today. I'm putting on my teacher hat. No, but I guess the way I can best describe how I do it, because you're right, I've been privileged enough. You mentioned how, you know, you didn't have these skills until you were later in life. And I feel flattered, but I feel like that's also a little bit harsh on yourself and too flattering to me. Not having kids, it's a big perk. It's a big perk to like life in terms of having time to.
True. Very, very true.
But for sure. But the way that I've explained to people in terms of like, you know, working through that, I call it critical emotional thinking. You know what I mean? Like, you're thinking critically and reflectively about your own thoughts and feelings. Metacognition, if you want to use a big word, right? Thinking about your thinking, or in this case, your like feelings. And for me, what I do is when something challenges me, and I feel things in my guts. So I'm one of those people. I follow my gut feeling. I feel like, I didn't like the way that feels, right? And I just go, why? And then I try to answer that question. Oh, I didn't like when so-and-so said they didn't like my new haircut. Well, why didn't I like that? Well, I didn't like it because I spent a whole lot of money on that haircut and money's kind of tight right now. Why? And then I just keep asking why. And I just follow that. I call it following that thread, right, of like feelings. Like, there is the answer I've been searching for. You know, sometimes the answer comes from within, kind of thing, right? But through that reflection and just, you know, never being satisfied and just like ending with feeling that way. I don't end until I'm like, that's where the root of this all comes from. It wasn't actually about my haircut. It actually all goes back to Christmas Eve in 2003. You know what I mean? Like, one of those things, right? Where it's like, it had nothing to do with anything all along. It just manifested in this weird kind
but that's
of way.
Usually so, how it goes. That's exactly how it goes, right? Yeah. And I thank you for breaking it down exactly that way, because I've said that on this very podcast, where it's like, you just got to keep asking yourself questions, and you'll know when you get to the answer, because it's like whatever you're feeling in your body, whatever that emotion is. Exactly.
It just goes away. It just,
exactly.
It just
as soon as you land on it.
Like all that tension and anger, you just go.
Yeah, exactly. That's how you know. That's how you know. So for those of you who are like, well, I keep asking you questions. Well, when you don't feel angry anymore, that means you found the reason, the real reason why. And it is like every single time I've.
Yeah. So if you're so angry, keep asking more questions. 100%. Just keep asking more questions. Like, is the answer. You are not done yet.
And it could take some time. It could take an hour. It could take two. It could take a day. Time. It could take a week. But keep asking the questions. And eventually, and in my experience, it's never the thing that originally made me mad. Never. It is never, ever, ever that thing. It is something so old and so buried and so long, usually from childhood, is what I realize, some narrative that we've painted for ourselves. And so how do you teach that, Anthony? Like, how do you teach that? So it might be...
Sorry, you cut out there for...
So it might be easier to teach that to the youth, right? You're a teacher. They might be a little more open. Kids are like sponges, right? But how do you impart that knowledge to like a friend or a significant other or a partner, someone that you're in close relationship with, so that they receive it and understand what you're trying to say?
I think I honestly would say just the way that me and you just did. And for having trouble with it, it's like what you said earlier, right? Which is meet people where they're at. Like, I can't make you reflect on how you think things. You know what I mean? Like, I can only know that, like, I've done that work and I know where I stand on things and I know why I stand on things, right? Yeah, I can help you. I guess you can talk to me. You know what? Actually, that's what it's been actually. Sorry, so I should rephrase. I can't make anybody do anything, but if somebody's willing and open to learn, I'm always going to help. That's just my philosophy on life. But if someone's like, I don't know how, right? Like, oh, that's too hard. Like, I don't know how to do that. Okay, cool. Let's, if it's something that you're mad about, same thing. You're mad about, you said you didn't like my haircut. And then I will just sit there and go, okay, why are you upset about your haircut? Well, I don't know. No. I don't know is not an acceptable answer right now. Why are you mad about that? I don't care what the answer is. Give me an actual answer. And they'll go, well, it's because of this. Okay, why that?
I love that.
Okay, well, it's because of that. Okay, why that now? And then I just keep saying, why? And then eventually they go, oh, that's what you mean. I'm like, yeah, just keep. And I like the word why, because, you know, I'm not sure if you're a Ted Lasso fan, mom, but that's a Ted Lasso thing. It's like, be curious, right? It's be curious. And that's, for me, where it comes from. Like, I'm just a naturally curious student. I want to know why things. Like, you are my mom, you know, as a kid. I was that kid, still am that kid growing up, of like, if you tell me to do anything, I'm like, well, why? I'm like, why do you have to do that? Like, why can't it be this way? Like, why can't it be that way? Because I just, and as soon as you give me a reason that makes sense, I'm like, oh, okay, cool. And as long as it makes sense. But if it doesn't make sense to me,
see, folks, I told you, we raised some children that we taught them to ask questions, and ask questions they do. Well, hey, I love that. Well, you come by it honestly. It does, but you come by it honestly, right? Because both, I mean, we've already said our family is one that loves this kind of discourse and discussion. The debates can get extremely heated and some feelings can get hurt. But that doesn't mean that we should, that doesn't mean we shy away from it. We still come back to the table and have conversations. So, for you, what kind of brought you, I mean, I guess I kind of already know the answer, but I'm going to ask the question anyways. Like, you've done so much from my perspective, inner reflection. You and I've had many conversations about lots of different things. Like, what brought you here? What brought you to the path of like your own inner journey, at such a young age?
Man, who knows? Truly. I'm not trying to be coy. Like, truly, who knows? I don't know why my brain works this way. That's a why I haven't even answered for myself. I guess I shouldn't be so flippant. I guess I would say part of it is, like, you know, I have goals and ambitions, big ones in life. And I'm a big balance guy. I'm big on balance, right? I'm very strong in certain areas. And, you know, I'm always trying to get better, whether it's in the strong areas or in the weak areas. And the best way to do that is to reflect. You know, you can't know how to be better at something until you know the mistakes that you made. You know, there's a very famous problem solving procedure that starts with, you know, the ways to solve any problem. So I might be wrong on this one, but the way I was taught, the way to solve problems, you know. Know what the problem is, think about some options for how to solve that problem, weigh the pros and cons of those options, make a decision, and then you reflect, right? And so I'm big on that last one. I'm big on the reflecting why we made those choices, how could it have gone better, how could it have gone worse. The key is balancing that reflection, because in today's mental health open world, too much reflection and what could have gone better, how could I have been different, can lead to some real deal anxiety and depressive thoughts. You know, we can't go back in time and change things, but we can learn from our mistakes, right? And we can gain some insight into how we think, how we feel. You know, those answers to how we traverse the world and take that knowledge into future situations.
I think that there's also an opportunity, and I think that was summarized in your last point, to celebrate even in the situations where we didn't maybe handle it as we envisioned that we could, or it didn't go as well as we thought, or whatever the case may be. And I think that what helps us move forward, and really what I'm talking about here, is breaking of cycles and patterns. Because have you identified your own cycles and patterns?
I think so. And I'm still trying to work through it. For sure. I've identified at least one big one that I'm really still working on. I'm big into kind of, pardon me, it's that black and white thinking, sometimes called all or nothing. You know what I mean? It's this or. Yeah, I guess I'm coming along. I'm still doing that work, I would say. I feel like I'm better at identifying them. Doing the actual work is challenging. You know, it's not just a day-to-day thing. It's like a moment-to-moment interaction-to-interaction thing as well.
100%. So. And I think the truth is, Anthony, that if we're not learning and growing, then we're dying. I think it's lifelong work. Mm-hmm. I don't think that the work ever, ever, ever stops. I think that it becomes, I don't want to say easier. There's this really great type of analogy that Gabby Bernstein used in one of her books, where she talks about navigating like the emotional waves that come up. And that's really obviously as a result of any unhealed things from the past. And the way that she put it is kind of like, as those waves come, like when they first come, and you don't have the tools or the resources to navigate how to deal with the wave, you'll get knocked over by it. But as you gain more tools and gain more resources and learn more about yourself and what your own wounds are, those waves, they have less and less effect. They become smaller in life. And so you just become better at navigating those waves. Now, I don't know. We'll see how the theory goes. But so far to this point, I think I agree. If I think about the challenges that I've had in my own life, and how the waves almost felt like they would knock me over. But now it's just a better understanding, I think, of this journey called life and the challenges that we come up across and why. Most importantly, why, and how it's really more of a reflection of something that I need to work on within myself. So for you, you know that I'm on a spiritual journey. I'm curious how that has played into your own experience.
Sorry, so you're saying like how has spirituality played a role in my own life? Not hugely, like if at all. If I'm being honest, obviously, I'm sure it'd be interesting for listeners to hear the cross comparison of your children and their views on spirituality, because we are, in that regard, we truly do run the entire spectrum. With myself being, the most, I don't want to say skeptical, but the least in tune, I guess you might say. But I'm adjacent to it. I'd say I'm spiritual adjacent, because, you know, you can't not be when your mom is not a witch, spiritual. You can't not be fully like out on these things. So I have knowledge and I have things that I know and understand, and I've had my own experiences. The degree to which it like impacts my day-to-day, like a little bit, I'd say like not 50, but like 20 to 30%, I'd say. It like it's kind of there in the recesses of my mind as, you know, a as a potential factor to all things.
You know what I find really interesting, Anthony, is you work in an indigenous community. And indigenous folks have, as far as I know, and please correct me if I'm wrong, those who participate have strong ties to the ancestors and the beliefs around the value of the youth and the elders and being tied to the land and spirits and all this other kind of stuff. So how do you navigate that? Because that is a form of spirituality and faith. It's not maybe traditional, but it's certainly traditional to Canada. And I mean, in terms of our indigenous people, how do you navigate that without having some kind of, because I know you hold indigenous people in strong, strong regard. So how do you navigate that?
As you're talking, I guess perhaps it does impact my insights more than ever, because I guess my take is like spirituality. It's not like it's fake. It's not like there's not spirit and power, magic, if you want to use that word, jokes aside, in this world, right? Like there are these, in my opinion, these metaphysical things that we can't fully explain. I've had my own experiences. I've heard stories, et cetera, et cetera. So I guess with how I grapple with it in my works field, in my workspace, I just understand that like that is a, that like those truths are not like, I don't diminish them. Like those are as much a part of the quote unquote truth of the world as a scientist or putting out a research paper, right? Learning about medicine men performing medicine, which is the word for magic in Dene stories or in indigenous culture, right? Like that is there's truth to that. You know what I mean? There's people who have these experiences and like, I'm not going to ever be able to tell them anything different. Right. So I guess for like me, I just kind of, I'm like, yeah, like bars, like, yeah, this is a real thing. And like, I totally, when elders are telling stories about seeing, I'm not going to say any bad names here. You know what I mean? As trainees, you know, there's certain words that we we just can't say. Right. But when I hear stories,
I understand.
Like,
yes.
When I hear stories about people seeing certain things in the bush or having experiences, I'm never like, that could never happen. I'm like, yeah, fair bars. Probably. If that's what happened, that's what happened. I'm not going to like, you know, it's like that. It's like that. I believe you kind of like sentiment, you know, because, yeah, that is a part of life, religion, spirituality, etc. And I think it's real, I guess, to what I guess where I come in is I'm like, the degree to which that I like put stock into that personally or like take that into my own life, I guess I'm still figuring out, you might say.
That's fair. It was a late journey for me, but a journey nonetheless. So... okay. Well, thank you so much, Anthony, for this discussion. Mm-hmm. I welcome your ideas and your sharing of what you've learned thus far and part of your own journey. I'm extremely grateful. And you'll be welcome back again.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm loving what you're doing. Interesting topic today. Didn't expect that, but glad I could be the resident expert on all things internet toxicity and help your viewers gain more insight into the generation I'm sure that they're not a part of. I'm going to be your inroad to the youth, and we all know that's how we get views and clicks. So you're welcome for being here.
Oh my gosh. Young people like me, I will have you know.
Yeah, you're super hip. Super, super hip, man.
Sassy children. Thank you so much for joining myself and Anthony today as we discussed a myriad of topics. As always, it's a pleasure to have you join us. If you enjoyed the content that I am bringing you, please feel free to like, subscribe, etc. Or you can reach out to me with any content or, sorry, any feedback that you would like to share at Charisse@yourcollective.ca. Thanks so much and take care.